Welcome to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. I'm Derin Abogaida. Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has defied calls to quit for violating lockdown rules. But he said he won't step down over the so-called Partygate scandal. And now he faces the prospect of a no-confidence vote among MPs in the coming days. We look at the implications of unseating a prime minister in the UK and what could it mean for British politics. Let's discuss all of this with our guest. Joining us from London is John Peet, who's the Brexit and political editor at The Economist. In Falkirk, Gillian McKay is a member of the Scottish Parliament and member of Scottish Green Party. Also in London, Mujtaba Rahman, who's the managing director for Europe at Eurasia Group. Welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us on Inside Story. Gillian McKay, if I may start with you. The Prime Minister has said that he's taken responsibility for his handling of the Downing Street parties and insists that everyone should wait for the findings of that official inquiry being conducted by Sue Gray before reaching any sort of judgment. But you are calling for the Prime Minister to go. Are you saying that he needs to go now? And if so, tell us why.
The Prime Minister should have gone at the start of this scandal. The Prime Minister and those in his inner circle clearly think that they're above the rules. As you've laid out, they've breached the rules several times, repeatedly and deliberately. They've tried to cover it up and some have even been caught laughing about it. And it's no laughing matter for those of us who've lost a loved one during the pandemic. Boris Johnson is completely unfit to be Prime Minister and it is beyond time for him to go.
But why not wait? Why not just wait for the report that's due out, we understand, next week?
I think he is now beyond reproach, to be perfectly honest. His excuses have changed consistently. He's almost certainly misled Parliament. We've got calls from his own backbenches to resign. And today we've heard from a senior MP of allegations of blackmail against MPs who would undermine Johnson. So I think we don't really need to wait for something that they've already admitted to. The Prime Minister himself has admitted that he was at that party, but didn't know that it was a party. He would have known that was the numbers of people alone was breaking the rules. So he really is trying to get out of this by playing stupid rather than playing deliberate and ignorant.
All right, John, what's your take on this? I mean, some MPs are saying that they're still waiting for this report. Is that going to be the next key moment here?
Yes, it is going to be the next key moment. I mean, I think there was a point on Tuesday of this week when it looked as if enough Conservative MPs would say, we've had it, we're fed up with Johnson, and we're worried that we're going to lose the next election and lose many of our seats. And they then looked as if they were on the verge of calling for a confidence vote. But I think after yesterday, the mood has changed a little bit towards saying, let's wait for this report, see how bad this report is, and in particular, see if this report says that Boris Johnson concludes that Boris Johnson misled Parliament. If that happens, I think there will be a confidence vote. So the next big point is indeed the publication of the report. But even if he gets through that, I think the mood in the party is that they're very worried that Boris Johnson has lost the confidence of voters and is taking the Conservative Party into a position where they may lose the next election.
John, though the Prime Minister's admission and apology in the Commons, did it buy him some time, though? I mean, do you think that he'll survive the next few days, at least, without a no-confidence vote?
He's going to survive into next week, but I think next week could be a difficult time for him again when the report comes out. I think his performance yesterday did buy him a bit of time. And bizarrely, the defection of a Conservative MP and his decision to join Labour also helped him because it led Tory rebels to worry that if they take this too far, they may be opening the door to a Labour administration. But his denials and his apologies have not really cut through to the ordinary voters. They think he's just lying, that they don't believe his apologies. They think the line that he thought it was a work event, not a party, is incredible. And I think that they feel that they've lost confidence in their prime minister.
All right. Mujtaba, can you weigh in on all of this and tell us, I mean, do you think that he'll be able to survive the findings after the report comes out?
I'd agree very much with John. I think the mood in Westminster is violently swinging back and forth. And I do think Tuesday, the result of opinion polls in the Red Wall that suggested Johnson has lost some of his sparkle, in those crucial seats in the North and the Midlands. Lots of reports in Westminster about Red Wall MPs caucusing to send those letters into Sir Graham Brady, chairman of the 1922 committee, to trigger that vote of confidence. And then, of course, the defection yesterday of Christian Wakeford to the Labour side. I think the combination of those three things really, I think, meant Johnson was in trouble yesterday. And I agree with John that actually his performance and the defection, the combination of those two things, have brought him a little bit of time. But I think next week is now the point of maximum danger for the Prime Minister. The Sue Gray report, we know, is not going to make a determination on Johnson. It will present the facts and then it will leave it to others to make a judgment about whether Johnson has lied and subsequently and ultimately misled Parliament. And I think that is going to be a perilous moment for the Prime Minister. Assuming you do get 54 letters then into Sir Graham Brady, it's still a big jump to then get 181 MPs, which is what you would need to win a vote of confidence.
Okay, so do you think that the 54, Mushtaba, do you think that the 54 letters will actually be reached? I mean, for what we now know so far is that so far 11 Conservative MPs have publicly at least declared no confidence in the Prime Minister. So do you think that momentum is going to keep on growing?
I think a lot will hang on the wording and Johnson's reaction to the Sue Gray report. Only Sir Graham Brady knows how many letters have been received. There's, of course, MPs that are on the record, but many may have gone in that we don't know about. I think Brady has probably given indications to Number 10 about how serious the situation is. I suspect that is why Downing Street has signalled that they would fight a confidence vote. And again, I think that's why getting to the 181 Tory MPs is going to be quite a challenge. Assuming Johnson does get through the next week, and this will be my final point, then of course there's going to be a big challenge in the aftermath of the May Authority local elections, where I suspect the Tories will do very badly. And at that point, of course, inflation will be peaking and the concerns around cost of living will be very ever present for MPs in Parliament.
Gillian, the mood in the Conservative Party, and I think you alluded to this as well, is that it's being described as sort of very tumultuous. But do you think the MPs in the Conservative Party want a crisis right now on their hands such as this?
I think they've been given a crisis whether they want one or not. And it's very much up to those MPs at Westminster to advocate for the views of those constituents like David Davis alluded to, who are furious at the level of flippance from the Prime Minister. I think some of what I've heard from constituents about his performances at Prime Minister's questions, where he's trying to deflect, they're bringing out policies to try and deflect some of the heat from the Prime Minister, is only adding to that lack of confidence from the public. I think some of the Tories now really have to decide whether they want to continue under this morally bankrupt government that they have, or whether they're going to stand with their constituents. And as the other our other panellists have said, that could affect them very, very badly at the local elections, both in England and in Scotland in May as well.
John, you know, those who support the Prime Minister say that, well, this is a man who led the UK through a crisis, of course, like the pandemic, a national crisis, and maybe he should be given some credit. I mean, what do you think of that argument?
Well, he does have a sort of hardcore of supporters, obviously in the Conservative Party itself, and indeed many of the Conservative MPs who won seats in the 2019 election recognise that they did so because of Boris Johnson, his charisma, his promise to get Brexit done, and so on, and the sort of switch from Theresa May, who had been in effect pushed out by the party in 2019. But I think the issue that Tory MPs are grappling with is that it's not enough to have support inside the Conservative Party. He needs to have support of voters in the end. And the voters seem to have become disillusioned. particularly over these parties, but to some extent over the handling of COVID, over his chaotic image, over the arguments he's been having with some of his advisors, notably Dominic Cummings. Downing Street looks rather chaotic and disorganized. And I think voters don't like that. They think, you know, government should be better ordered. And that's really the underlying issue here.
What are the latest polls telling you, John, about the public's mood and what they want to see happen?
They're now saying that Boris Johnson's popularity rating is below that of Theresa May. And Theresa May was very unpopular towards the end of her term in office because she was failing to deliver Brexit. So he was never a very popular prime minister. That's one of the things to note about him. He was never as popular as people like Tony Blair or even in his day, John Major. But he had enough of a rating to win a large majority in the last election. And now I think the negatives against him, which were always higher than many people realised, have climbed to a level where Tory MPs, Conservative MPs, worry that they could lose the next election. And as long as that continues, it is a big thing to push out a prime minister. It hasn't happened very often. It happened most famously with Margaret Thatcher. But given that they worry about what might happen, it is something that could happen at any time, even if he survives the next few weeks and months.
Mustafa, I mean, John was just mentioning Theresa May. She did go through this in 2018, of course, and MPs submitted enough letters to trigger a confidence vote in her. But then when the vote came, she survived it. Mr. Johnson himself has survived sort of intense storms before, if I can put it that way. Can you see that happening to him?
I mean, I think it's probably too late for Johnson. I think the political context, the economic context is very challenging indeed. Omicron, in the government's eyes, we may be moving on from Omicron and turning that corner, but around the next corner is a massive cost of living crisis. Inflation is set to reach, I believe, 7% in the UK this year. So I think the economic challenges the government will face in the latter part of the year are going to be a very, very big problem for the government that will, I think, weigh down on Johnson. I don't think after the local authority elections he will be able to recover. So our view at this point is we're likely to face a leadership contest in the summer. I think probably the two front runners in that regard will be Chancellor Rishi Sunak and Foreign Secretary Liz Truss. I suspect neither, if it does go to a leadership contest, will want to concede, which means Tory members will need to have a say. And at least from where things sit at the moment, I believe Chancellor Sunak is most likely to succeed Johnson as Prime Minister in the second half of the year, probably to be announced at the Tory conference in the latter part of the year.
Okay, Gillian, would you like to weigh in on this issue of Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss that Mustafa was just talking about?
I think it'll come as no surprise that I completely lack a favourite Tory to take over from the Prime Minister. I think part of the problem for me is the fact that they are some of the people that are defending the Prime Minister at the moment. So if we're looking at the Prime Minister as being completely unfit, what does that say for the rest of the cabinet who are currently defending him and may have known about these parties as well? It's something that the cabinet widely won't answer if they were aware of what was happening. So there's a much wider problem at the heart of the UK government, which really Scotland has to get out from under as quickly as is possible, because we're seeing more and more abhorrent policies coming forward. The one that was announced over the weekend about using force against refugees in the Channel is just horrendous. And it's something that, as a country, we should not be standing for.
John, would you like to respond to what Gillian was saying?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, enemies of the Tory party are clearly quite growing, and many people worry about the direction that this government is taking. But back to the question of who might succeed Boris Johnson. I think I would agree with Mustafa that Rishi Sunak is the favourite. The only thing I would add is that past experience suggests that favourites often don't win in the end. And funnily enough, the front runner is often sort of picked out as somebody who everybody else has a go at, and then somebody else can emerge. So I wouldn't like to be absolutely you know, certain on predicting who might take over from Johnson at the end of this year.
Right. Okay. And what about the opposition party, John? Because the opposition is lapping this up. Keir Starmer saying Boris Johnson should be kicked out in the national interest. How is this reflecting on them?
Well, I mean, Keir Starmer's having a good run. It's taken him time to sort of get known by the public. You know, he arrived just as COVID hit the UK, and so people didn't see much of him. But now they've seen a lot more of him. They've seen a lot more of him in Parliament. And I think he has the air of somebody who's more serious and perhaps more trustworthy than Boris Johnson. And that's clearly helping him and his party. He still has a little way to go before he wins an election. But I think at the moment he's in a pretty good position. And oddly enough, I think in many ways, although of course he calls for Boris Johnson to go, as leaders of the opposition always will do, he's going to be in a better position if Boris Johnson stays than if Johnson goes and somebody like Rishi Sunak takes over. He's more likely to win against Johnson than anybody else.
Gillian, the Prime Minister's former top aide, Dominic Cummings, has been sort of, I guess, instrumental in all of this, saying that he himself had warned Boris Johnson about number 10 holding a drinks party in the garden during lockdown. But he also said that the Prime Minister just kind of waved aside the concerns about the gatherings. Could this be seen as some sort of vendetta by Cummings?
For some, I'm sure it could be, but I think Dominic Cummings has maybe found a sense of truth and has decided to unearth a lot of the problems at the heart of government. No matter what, these things shouldn't have happened, whether revealed by Dominic Cummings, whether they're revealed by other members of Downing Street staff, or whether they're unveiled by the press. These things should not be happening. They are flying in the face of everything that they asked the public to do, and the public have done brilliantly. Without the public adhering to these restrictions, we could have seen a much worse position. And for me, that's one of the big concerns going forward as we progress through the rest and hopefully the end of this pandemic, is that if our leaders haven't stuck to the rules that were set down, what hope do we have of the public adhering to any more rules that we might have to bring in if we get a worse variant sometime in the future?
Mustafa, also on Cummings, he went on to say that the Prime Minister had actually lied to Parliament about the party. So effectively, does this mean the accusation is that the Prime Minister has breached the ministerial code?
Yes, I think Cummings clearly is out to unseat Johnson. I think, you know, that's obviously a very big part of his mission. He's a big champion and supporter of Rishi Sunak. So I suspect in attempting to unseat Johnson, he will also be attempting to get an ally into number 10 to advance the post-Brexit agenda, especially around levelling up, which I think many in Whitehall and Westminster believe Sunak would have a better shot at implementing than Johnson has, or indeed will over the remainder of this term if he does indeed survive. So I think Cummings will continue to pile on the pressure. I think that does create risk, of course, because having served Johnson for so many years, he obviously has a stash of emails and evidence and things that he can continue throwing at the PM to create problems. And I think that's going to be the issue for Johnson. Every second we think he has stabilised, something else pops along, most notably through Dominic Cummings's blog. And I suspect that will continue to be the case until Johnson is so wounded, the party decides to remove him.
All right. We will have to see what happens in the next few days. But for the time being, thank you so much for speaking to us. John Peet, Gillian McKay and Mustafa Rahman, thanks for joining us. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Mohammed Laishi, Osama Alouni, Abdulrahman Warsame, and Paul Taylor. Studio sound was by Philip Morrison. The program was edited by Hatem Shibal, Lynn Engwin, and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again on Friday.